Hello, it's Neva at TimeForInvesting.com, and I want you to meet someone that's made a tremendous impact on my life and my real estate investing business. Every time I'm around him, I find myself saying, hold on, let me write that down. I just get great tips, insight, and knowledge to move forward. He's an active investor. He's president of Traction Real Estate Investors Association. He's founder of Traction Real Estate Mentors, and he sits on the board of the National Real Estate Investors Association. He's been featured on CNBC, The Washington Post, and many others. He's helped hundreds of average people to replace their income, quit their jobs, and turn full-time to real estate investing. That list includes myself, and I've also found out through conversation some of my cash buyers that I work with in my business are his past students. So this is no overstatement when I say there's just a wealth of information in his head, and I'm so happy he's taken the time to share some of it with us. So please welcome to the call, Tom Z.
Hi, Neva. Hi, Tom. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Hi, no, yeah, I'm so glad that you, you know, have time for me. So I really appreciate it. So one of the first questions that I had, I wanted to ask you, you know, why real estate? And also, how does someone know if this business is for them?
That's a great question. Why real estate? One of the things that I specifically love about real estate is that it has a really low barrier to entry. You don't need a specific education. You don't need a specific background. You don't need to be from, you know, the right country or the right family or the right anything. You can get into real estate. It's kind of the classic place to follow the American dream. You can build a real estate business, and you don't need any special qualifications. You just have to want to do the work that it takes to build it up and start doing successful deals. And that's the number one thing I love about it. The second reason is that there's something for everyone. So real estate is a big enough arena that there's literally something for every personality type and every person. If you are really good at project management, well, then you'll probably like rehabbing. If you really like managing people, well, you'll probably like rehabbing. If you hate all of that and you never want to do that, well, there's still something for you. Maybe you like wholesaling better. If you're particularly good at math and numbers and you love the thought of running calculations, maybe you'll get into note buying. Just as examples, there are so many different angles and approaches to doing successful real estate deals that you can find something that fits you. So when you have that long, hard look in the mirror and you can be really honest with yourself, you know, who are you? Who aren't you? What do you like? What don't you like? What are you good at? What are you awful at? And then just be honest about it, and then find an exit strategy that matches. That's what I love about real estate.
Wow, yeah, that's, you know, that you just hit something, because I was just I have a caller that I'm working with now, and she's 90, and she owns a lot of real estate, free and clear. And she was telling me that she started investing in real estate when she was 50. So when you said that, I just thought of her, because so many people, they may think, you know, they're too old to start or something like that. But then I thought, even now at 90, you know, she still can, you know, what does it take to just, you know, have a lot of rental property and just receive your rent every month? You know, so it's like when you said there's something for everyone, I thought of her. So that's such a great tip to say, you know, everyone can find something in this business.
Yeah, it's never too late. It's never too early either, but it's never too late. You know, I coach a lot of people who are, how would I describe it? They are looking for a second half of life career, let's say. You know, they put their 20, 25, 30 years in one job. They're, you know, middle age, and they're retiring out of that job. Maybe they have a pension out of that job, but now they're looking for something else, specifically something they can do and be their own boss, be on their own, and kind of, you know, prove to themselves they can do that too. And, you know, they've got some of the background and security from their previous life. So it's that second half of life career. It's never too late. You can always get started, and that's a really cool thing about real estate also.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the next question I had, this is a question that I just get all the time. What do you recommend for a struggling newbie investor to do the first 30 days in this business to close a deal?
Well, when you're just starting off, honestly, you have to market like mad. Market like mad. Right? Find a deal, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters at all. You can learn everything else about the business. You can read about everything else. Basically, you can read about all the other bridges that you need to cross to get to the finish line. The problem is, until you get across bridge number one, none of that stuff really matters. It's just interesting knowledge. It's a footnote on what you might need to do, but you're only going to be able to use it if you find a motivated seller that wants to sell you their property. And so the way to do that is by marketing. So at the beginning, you have to market like mad and get a laser-like focus on that. Otherwise, you're not going to – it's just not going to happen because you learned something. It's not going to happen just because you want it to happen. You have to actively go out there and make it happen.
Right. And that is so true because I was I tell people, and you know, that I was, you know, trying to do this before I got a mentor, and that was the thing. When I started the program, the first thing was like, oh, you need to do marketing. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute, you know, I want to read. You know, I want to understand the whole process from beginning to end. But it's so true because you really have to market and market and market and market. And it's like all the other things, you know, you can learn, you know, during that time or something, but you really do have to market. But one of the things I find, I mean, now I'm used to it, but one of the things I find when people ask me questions, I find that they're so scared, like, they're scared to market, you know, they're scared to put a property under contract, they're scared to talk to the sellers. So what do you recommend for that, for people to just, you know, move and just get over that fear?
Wow, now that's a good point, and that's why it's hard to market at the beginning. And you went through that when you joined my program. Like you just said, it was, but you wanted to know what the process and the path was first. You know, some of that you didn't want to be walking in the darkness. That's understandable. So there's a combination. If you recall, one of the things we saw was, look, you know, I kept telling you, you got to focus on marketing. You got to do the marketing, get the deals. But at the same time, I was kind of filling in the backstory. Here's what's going to happen. Here's the process.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with learning that. But my caution is, don't get wrapped up only in learning that and never taking the first step. Take the first step while at the same time you're learning everywhere you're going to be heading. That way, I think you can kind of keep a foot in both worlds there and bridge the gap and be doing the marketing, which is the only thing that's going to matter to you at the beginning, while at the same time understanding where you're heading. So there's... All that knowledge is important, but you can't make that the only thing you do up front because the knowledge alone isn't going to get you there. You have to take the action.
Right. I guess that's the thing, is you have to take action, because even though I had read all these books before, you know, I had never, you know, until I joined the program, I didn't even realize until it hit me. I was like, you know, I've never done any marketing. You know, I had, like, you know, I had all these books and courses. I said, oh, you know, it didn't even dawn on me, like, hey, you know, I never took action to market, to buy postcards, to do yellow letters. So maybe, you know, then you start to understand, oh, duh, that's why I never got a deal. So
funny. If no one knows that that's what you do, then, yeah, you're not going to get a deal.
Right.
Reach out and attempt to find a motivated seller. Guess what, folks? You're not going to find one. It's, you know, you don't just walk out your door and trip over one. It's not. It's a simple process. It's not that easy.
Right. That's so true.
Killing fear. It is. I mean, just knowledge will help kill fear. So okay, you know, go and read and learn. But taking action and just suck it up and go out there and call. I mean, you know what? Pick up, you know, grab the for sale by owners and call them. They want to hear from you. That's why they advertised. So call them and attempt to at least get your feet wet. I'm not saying it's going to go anywhere, but I want to harden you up a little bit. I want to make your skin tougher to rejection, because a lot of people are afraid of rejection. And,
right.
And that's a big fear. You know, you don't know what you're doing. You know what? Then practice. Because when you start doing that, then some things you'll do right, some things you'll do wrong, but you'll come out the other side going, you know what, I'm still living and breathing. That wasn't that bad. It might have been a little bit bad, but it wasn't that bad. That'll naturally start to kill the fear, because you'll at a certain point, I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but at a certain point you won't care. You're not going to care what people think of you anymore, because it's just going to be, okay, this is another call I have to make and go through a process, go, you know, follow a system to see what happens. And so, you know what, practice on for sale by owners, or practice on people that post their property on Craigslist. They want to hear from you. You're not bugging them. You know, if you are bugging them, then there's something really wrong with them, because they posted an advertisement the call.
Well, you know, that's so true.
Yeah. You know, and look, it's not always going to be pleasant. Your first contract that we got, Neva, that deal didn't work out.
Oh, right, the one, yeah, in Maryland, yeah.
The ugly duckling house.
Yeah.
At the top, 7 steps with no driveway. At the tail end of an ugly street next to a dead end sign with a dumping ground at the end of it. We didn't move that. That was unpleasant, but you learned a lot from it, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was unpleasant because, you know, you definitely want to close. You know, you're so anxious to close, you know, anything in the beginning. But that's the thing is that I've learned, you know, I can probably write a book on just that one. It wasn't a deal, but just on that one experience, because it's like I know now what not to waste my time on. Like, I know, like, what type of properties, you know, people want to buy and what type of properties people are not going to want to buy. So I learned a lot through that experience. So, it wasn't a waste of time.
You didn't make any money on it, but you learned a lot because you were actually in motion and going through the process. It wasn't just
reading
about it. You were dealing with the person. And specifically, I mean, speaking of you know, like the fear part, I remember when you called me and said, okay, you know, this deal's dead. How do I tell the seller? And I said, well, Neva, you're in for a not lovely conversation. But here's what you call them up and say. And that's that. It's uncomfortable, but going through that process, you know, I think you could probably speak to that. That was fine. You got through it. You said something uncomfortable to them. You had to bail out on that promise, and it didn't work. And that's life. But you're still alive and breathing, right?
Right. I made it through.
And better for
is like amazing, because that's definitely now the. You know, I've never had that, you know, happen to me again. So that's the thing. It's like my first deal was probably the most painful, you know, it wasn't a deal. But I guess that, you know, that first contract was actually like my, you know, my most painful one. I was like, geez.
Yep. But that's fine. A little bit of scar tissue never hurt anybody.
Yeah.
It's made you much more successful on the ensuing deals.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, you know, and I know, you know, with more things that need to factor in, like the steps, there were just so many steps to go into that house. And it's so funny because when my niece was with me, when we went to the property, and I remember she was probably 16 at the time, and, you know, so she's young, and she said, geez, there's a lot of steps to get in this house. Like, you know. And so... You know, in the beginning, you know, you're just so excited, you're not even thinking, because now I'm thinking, you know, as a homeowner, I'm like, geez, I don't want to come in with groceries and I have to go up 20 steps. So, you know, I just, you know, now I can sit back and, you know, just really think more of how a homeowner is going to look at this property, which is how an investor has to look at it, because, you know, after it's rehabbed, you want someone to buy it. You don't want it to just sit there.
Especially not, because that's, you know, every day it sits there, you're losing money.
Right.
So, yes, you as the wholesaler need to think about that as if you were the rehabber, because that's who you're selling to. So you have to think like they're going to think. And,
right.
You know, and then you'll learn to kind of make sure you provide them with what they need to be provided with.
Right. And that's why I say that experience was so helpful, because, you know, all the rehabbers that went to look at it, they were telling me, like, you know, the price was right, but they were telling me, you know, different reasons. Like, each rehabber had a different reason. Like, oh, I don't want, like, the house was really tiny. And, you know, so one guy, he said, well, you know, because it was like a huge, it was a huge lot. But he was saying, oh, you know, I don't want to have to deal with the permits because the permits can take a long time. And then that's when I started learning, you know, rehabbers are trying to get in and get out as quickly as possible because every day, you know, they're paying interest on the money they borrowed. So then I learned that, you know, you want projects where the rehabber can get in and get out quickly. So each person that was saying no, they were telling me the reason. So that's why in that one house, I probably walked away with like 20 things that I need to make sure I look for when I go to a house. So it was just, you know, so I learned a lot.
And tying that back into your question about overcoming fear, well, if you learn 20 things, you kind of that had to shine some light into the nooks and crannies of the business, and so that you weren't as afraid anymore. You know what you know.
Right.
The things are going to be, and so fine, move ahead, and it's not going to be worse than that.
Right, because one of the fears I had was, you know, you get in the contract and then you're so paranoid about your cash buyers list. But then, you know, people kept saying, don't worry about your cash buyers list. When you find a deal, the money will come. And so that was true because, you know, once I got that under contract, you know, I probably had, you know, just in a day, probably 20 people go look at that house. So then just seeing that, you know, all these people came out, you know, to look at the property ready with cash, you know, the fear of, oh, no, I can't find the cash buyers, you know, that fear went away because I realized, oh, I have cash buyers or, you know, I can joint venture. Other people know cash buyers. So then that fear of, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do once it's under contract and I can't find the cash buyers? So then that went away, so I didn't have that fear anymore.
Well, and that's a good example because a lot of times I know, you know, people are told that, like, you know, their first move is to go build a cash buyers list. I completely disagree because buyers are pretty easy to find. You know, and particularly if you have a good deal, they will hound you for that deal.
Oh, yes.
You know how that is now. And I think I told you.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the buyers. The buyers will come. We'll put it out there, you know, send out the list. You show up at your RIA, whatever. You'll find people. The trick is finding the property, find the deal.
Right.
We're going right back to what that first bridge you need to cross is, and that's get out there and market like mad and find a motivated seller with a property to sell you. That's where the business is done. The buyers is easy. So that's why sometimes when, you know, people say go do that first, I go, no. That's giving you something to do, but that's kind of giving you busy work. And busy work isn't going to keep you in business or keep you in business.
Right, and that was, that's a big thing, too, is doing busy work because that's, you know, you can really, you start thinking, man, I'm working so hard, but then when you really analyze what you were working on, you didn't do anything where people are, you know, receiving the information that you're looking for houses to buy because, you know, if you're just like, you know, I don't know, like you said, building a list of cash buyers, like people still don't know that you're looking to buy houses, so it's still not helping you get a deal. So just making sure that you, you know, watch your time and make sure that, you know, majority of your time is spent on finding deals and not just, you know, admin work.
Well, because people get wrapped up in the admin work because at least they feel like they've done something, except you haven't done anything productive, so you never generate anything out of it. It's like going around trying to build everyone wants to build their dream team first and interview attorneys. Go ahead, interview an attorney when you don't have anything to give them or do. It's not a very fruitful conversation. But you'll interview an attorney when you when you have a deal to present. Then you'll know whether or not it's working out well because you'll see how the person is actually having something to do. So I think a beginning investor, to say investors in general, but particularly beginning investors, you have to be really careful about getting wrapped up in busy work or day-to-day items. It's not about checking things off a list. It's about doing things that actually produce value. And you really have to look at your entire to-do list and say, all right, how much of this is kind of fluff and how much of this will really make me some money? And you have to have the discipline and teach yourself to focus on the things that actually make you money.
Okay, great. Great advice. And the next thing I wanted to touch on was right now, I know a lot of people ask me, they come to me, they say, I want to get started, but, you know, I really don't have a lot of funds. And, you know, the economy's pretty bad now. So a lot of people are just trying to start something on the side or a side hustle or something like that. So I guess, what do you recommend, you know, when people ask you, you know, I really don't have a lot of money, you know, what should I do? I want to get started, but I just really don't have a lot of funds to get started.
Well, they're going to have to spend a little bit on marketing. You know, some marketing methods don't cost much, or they're free. Those tend to take more time. Then fine, then invest your time. Then on the other side of the spectrum, there's marketing methods that don't take much time, but those tend to cost more. And as you know, so there's like they're inversely proportional between how much time you spend versus how much money you spend. So if you have more time than money, invest your time. If you have more money than time, then invest your money. You know, so if you're relatively broke, maybe you want to do things, I mean, you call it a side hustle, or maybe you want to kind of hit the streets and get out there and hustle. And don't forget kind of good old-fashioned networking. Talk to people. Tell them what you're looking for. Activate them as your bird dogs. You know, start talking to people everywhere. That doesn't cost you anything. Start driving for deals or walking for deals or strolling for deals, you know, when you're out with your kids. And that doesn't generate anything on its own other than a list of potential properties that you can then go home and research and try to find the owners and try to get them on the phone. So, you know, you can do those cheaper marketing methods if you're broke at the beginning. And your focus should be wholesaling, because it's going to pay out fast once you have it done. It's going to be little to no risk on your way in, and so it's accessible. Don't, you know, put any sort of dreams of the big deal aside. Don't get a bad infection of big dealitis. Just wait. Your time for big deals will come, but if you're broke at the beginning, there's nothing wrong with a quick wholesale fee. You know how big some of those wholesale fees can be.
But right.
If you have a modest $5,000, there's nothing wrong with that. Take it
right.
And move on. Don't say, well, I could make 50 if I, yeah, you can make 50 if you do X, Y, and Z, but X, Y, and Z might completely knock you down. So if you're broke at the beginning, then you've got to focus on what you are actually able to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. It may be your first rodeo, but it's not going to be your last rodeo. So there'll be other deals in the future. Just be disciplined. You'll get there if you play your cards right on the first deal.
Okay. Got it. That's a great advice. And also, with the marketing, I guess in today's market, what type of leads do you recommend people going after?
Well, some of it hasn't changed that much. I know everyone kind of wants there to be, you know, like an answer for today's market. I find a lot of the classic approaches work. And, you know, find who a classically motivated seller is. You know, when you have someone who needs to sell their property even more than they want to sell it, that's a motivated seller. When things happen in people's lives, you know, they go into foreclosure, they go into bankruptcy, they get divorced and can't afford the house anymore. You know, either side of the couple can't afford it on their own. Some people are getting older, and they don't have anyone else in the house anymore. You know, they raised a family of six there, and now it's just them. It's too much.
Right. Yeah.
Or what I find a lot, you know, older people whose knees are hurting them, and they're tired of going up and down the stairs, and they'd rather move further south and have a one-story condo or, like, you know, a garden style. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes that's the motivation. Or the complete opposite, you have the young family just married with one new kid who now needs a little more space and is looking for a home that they're going to hold on to for a number of years in the future. And so they're going to sell their starter home because they need something more now. So basically that's why real estate deals are always happening, because life is always happening. All those things are happening. We can't control it. People are getting older. You know, new people are being born. People are getting sick. People are dying and leaving houses behind. That's life. Mm. When you realize that, you tap into it. You figure out, well, what would those people do when they need to sell their house? And then you go there and you market there. You find those people there and meet them there and connect with them there. And it's doesn't really matter what the economy is doing, because life is not coming to a standstill. So there's always going to be a market for there's always going to be motivated sellers out there in the market for what we do.
Right. Yeah. I like that you're saying to focus more on life, because the other day, and this is the second time I've had someone call me, I had a lady call me from the hospital before, and then I had the other day someone called me. They were in it was like a nursing home type rehab place. And then I started thinking, I said, you know, I probably should start marketing to these, you know, type of places, because these people had, the last lady that called, because that's what I said to her, I said, did I send you the card there? And she said, no, it was at her house. So I guess she was saying eventually at one point she went to her house for like a short visit, or someone must have maybe taken her mail. And she got the car. But, you know, because that's what I was thinking. Oh, I don't market to these places. But that's so true. People that are, like, you know, in the hospital for extended periods of time, they need to sell their house. Because, you know, she's like, you know, I've been in here for a few years now. It's kind of time for me to just, you know, let the property go. And then the first lady that called me from the hospital, you know, she was, like, really sick to the point, you know, they're about to ship her somewhere else. And so she was like, if I could just, you know, get this mortgage, you know, off my back. Because, you know, can you imagine you're, like, sick with, like, cancer or something, and then you're, like, stressed out about, you know, paying your mortgage. You know, you just don't need that additional stress. So it's so funny that you said instead of focusing on the market, focus on, you know, the life changes. Because it didn't hit me until, you know, the second lady called me. I said, you know, I should probably start, you know, advertising to, like, nursing homes and these type of places. Because if you're in, you know, if you have a house and you're in these places for a long time, eventually you're going to want to sell your house.
For sure. And, Neva, you still have access to the student section of my website. I have a letter there, which you can go and download, and if you send it to, like, it's the caseworkers or the social workers at nursing homes and places like that, because, yeah, they know what everyone's going through, because
right,
they know
yeah.
the patient, they know the family. So market to them and just say, look, we can help you help your people. That's what they want to hear. And then they'll reach out to you. And I'll tell you, it's a particularly good market of people, you know, older Americans like that, more elderly, a lot, they're from a different generation too, right? So that wasn't a generation that thought they had to refinance 7 times in 3 years and pull every last penny in equity out. Okay.
That's so true. That's so true, because, I mean, I'm, like, amazed, you know, when I started and people were saying free and clear, I'm like, who owned the house free and clear? But you're right. There's so many people that generation that, you know, they're like, you know, I purchased this house for $70,000 and I never refinanced it. So, you know, they have no mortgage.
Yes. Meanwhile, the rising tide lifted all the values of all the boats, theirs included, right? So, I mean, their house is now very valuable. They
yeah.
never, it was only 30 years anyway. They paid it off 20 years ago.
And, right.
And now they're waiting. I mean, I see a lot of that in my own neighborhood, and that's specifically what we target. And you can get, I mean, you know, come on, we're real estate investors. We're supposed to be creative. You can get creative with these people, because it's not, you know, if you're 70 or 80 years old, that you know, a big wad of cash may not even be what you're looking for. You're looking for maybe an income for the rest of your life. And so they sell you on owner financing, and you can, well, how much do you need every month? Great. You know, you need, you know, $5,000, $6,000. That's what you pay them for the owner financing. And then they're happy, they're set, and then they know that when they eventually pass, that mortgage can be given to their heirs. Now they're, you know, they've basically given an income stream to their kids. So it can work out very good. It's a very powerful way of approaching it. And meanwhile, they know they have to leave the house eventually. They're getting too old to take care of it and handle it. So, yeah, I mean, you're helping them out in the process. Or they're already in the nursing home, and they finally accept that they're not going to be leaving the nursing home. They're not going back. And so they
right.
might as well use that house that they had all those years to their advantage, and
right.
funding through the rest of their life, and then they can still pass that funding on to their children when they die.
Yeah, I was thinking. I said, you know, that's definitely now that you mentioned about the letter, I definitely need to sign it. I just signed them the other day too, because I was pulling one of the contracts on the site. But yeah, I need to go look at the marketing thing, because I had went in and like downloaded everything one day, but then it's like it's so much I probably forgot that I even had a letter that I could that's already there that I could send to the nursing home. Because yeah, it was just when she called me, I said, you know what, this is the second person that's called me, you know, and these are two people that were just really motivated, that were like, you know, this is what I need to do. I don't have, you know, I'm sick. Fixing the house and getting a realtor is not an option, you know. And I said, you know, I've never even looked into this. I should probably start marketing to these, you know, marketing, because it's probably other people, you know, in the center, you know. I said, I need to look into this.
You're seeing a trend. So, I mean, you've got some proof of concept. So now market to it and prove what kind of response you get.
Right. Yeah, I'm definitely going to do that. And that's the last lady. She was the same one that called me. She was she's 90, and she was, like you said, the same thing. She was even saying, you know, she would hold a mortgage because she really didn't want like the huge capital gains to hit her. And she was like, yeah, that's what she was saying, because she was saying that, you know, the nursing home is $8,000. She pays $8,000 a month. So it's really important for her to have that income stream. So it's the same thing that you just said is what she was saying to me. But she was even saying, hey, you know, if you offer, because I gave her a cash offer, and she said, well, I'll also, you know, will you do a little higher if I hold a mortgage? And I kind of thought, why would she want to hold a mortgage? But that's what she was saying, that, you know, it's also important to have money, you know, constantly coming in. And she's paying $8,000 a month to be in the nursing home. So, you know, they want that too, that that constant income coming in is very valuable at that age too.
Yeah, and if you can solve her problems, make her very happy, and at the same time put together a good deal that you don't need a lot of cash to get into, and even if you're paying $10,000 a month, that's, I mean, if you got in for nothing and were able to turn that property around or rent it out, it works out quite well.
Right, and it's in a great area. Hopefully we can, you know, work something out, and we get this one to close.
One little tip that you'll find interesting is, remember, since you're the one writing the mortgage, and, you know, it's basically you and her writing the mortgage, that secures her payments, you can write it any way you want. So what might be good, you know, she wants a guaranteed income stream. You can make it that mortgage so you can change the collateral. So basically, you can move it over to another house if you wanted to and secure it by that. As long as it stays secured, it doesn't matter which property it's secured against. So you can get in, buy a property, rehab it, and resell it, and then move the mortgage to be secured against another property that you own. So she's still secured. She's still being paid, and yet you still made a killer profit off of the house that she actually sold you.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that. Because that's one of the things I was wondering about, paying off the mortgage, because the house definitely would be a rehab. And that's one of the things I thought was, how does that work? Because me and my husband were even discussing it. We were like, well, yes, you could offer her a high price. So then that's what we were saying. We said, wait a minute, if you rehab it, they may have to pay her, you know, when you sell the house anyway. So, yeah,
right.
I'm going to have to follow up with you to get some more info on that.
Just leave it as a note that even isn't necessarily secured. And that way when you rehab and then resell the property, you know, you would escrow enough to make sure, you know, you're set for however many years, or if you put a balloon, you know, like she's going to get paid out in 10 or whatever it is. Remember, you're writing the terms of the deal, and she's agreeing to it, so you can write it any way you want that makes sense for all parties involved.
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely reach out to you to get some more, because I sent her, I updated the contract, and so she's looking it over now, because, like I said, she presented the holding the mortgage to me, because I just presented her with a cash offer, and she kind of came back and said, hey, will you offer me a higher price if I hold the mortgage? And, you know, I was surprised, because I thought, you know, I just usually always think everyone wants their money now. So that was a lesson learned for me.
I mean, tax impact, and she knows she wants to be set for life. I mean, you said she's 90. I mean, God willing, she lives another 10 years, but you never know. She just wants to make sure she's secure.
Right.
The best way of doing that, I mean, she can leverage an asset she bought years ago and then turn around, and now it'll continue to take care of her.
So
it's an excellent option. She obviously, a little bit sophisticated, she knew what some other options were, which is excellent.
Yeah, because she even said to me, she said, you know, she said, oh, you're doing great if, you know, you're doing this already. She said, I didn't start investing until I was 50. And she said, you know, I have, she said, you know, she said, real estate is the reason, is the only way I can stay in here. She said, because I've invested in the stock market. And she said, if it wasn't for real estate, that's when she started telling me that, you know, this is after Medicare, there's like an $8,000 balance remaining that she, you know, she's taking out and she's paying just, you know, cash every month. So, you know, it was, you know, a lesson to me where she was saying, you know, yeah, you know, you can't, you know, depend on a job and these things. You know, she was just telling me, she said, oh, yeah, she said, real estate, oh, that's where it's at. So, you know, she was just telling me, like, you know, to keep at it. You know, she's, like, motivating me. She's like, keep at it. You know, you're headed in the right direction.
Yeah, and, you know, that's, you know, you talk about, you know, low barriers to entry. She started in her 50s. And basically, I mean, so you stumbled upon an excellent niche.
Yeah, because that's what I thought. I said, you know, I'm going to, you know, start to, you know, marketing to, you know, nursing homes, people that, you know, maybe just looking to sell, or, you know, or they want us to hold a mortgage. But, you know, I definitely want to follow it up because there is, you know, a need there, because these are not people that are looking to take money and, you know, fix their house up so that it looks nice and pretty for the typical market. They just want to kind of sell and get what they can and, you know, just move on. And, you know, because they have enough expenses, they don't, you know, they're trying to eliminate expenses. But thanks so much, Tom, for your time.
You're welcome.
I've learned so much, as usual.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So, everyone, I just wanted to also, you can each month, Tom offers free strategy sessions. He just does a select few, and these are one-on-one with him. You can go to his website and apply for a free strategy session, and I'll also post the link at the bottom when I post this interview. And also, I would tell you the other thing, as I mentioned, is Tom is president of our local RIA here, Traction RIA, in the D.C. area. So if you're in the D.C. area, I definitely would welcome you to come. It's been very valuable to me. And I'll also post a link to the RIA so you can search and find your local RIA in your area. So thanks a lot, everyone, and talk to everyone later. We'll catch up. Thanks. Bye.